Okay, we begin now the next Mishnah. Oop, I thought I had it. Let's try it again. How about now? Is it up?
Yeah.
Okay, Anachov, Beis Amid Beis, the second one. The third one. But the last one on the page. And we now get to the actual laws of lashes. Okay, how we give the lashes out to the person. It would be a good thing to discuss now that we're doing Maseches Makos. But it would be good, but it's freezing up on me. It's saying that it's sinking. I don't know what's going on here. We could do that forever. That did it. Okay, Ketzed Malkin also. How does the Beis Din lash the person? Okay. So what happens? So the entire process has to be done through the Beis Din. So we start with Kofesh Shtei Yadov Al Ha'amud Helech Velech. First, the Beis Din, they bind his two hands on either side of the post. There's a post, and they put his hands on it, and they tie his hands to that. Okay? There was a wooden beam that was stuck in the ground and rose to a height of 1.5 or 2 amas. So that's between 27 and 48 inches, which was lower than the height of the person. So his hands go down. Like that. The one to be flogged bends down and leans on this post as an agent of the court binds his hands to his sides below. Okay? There's a post in front. He puts his hand, he leans down on the post, they tie his hands. Like this. That's how he is situated.
He's standing.
It's not what it says. He's standing, but leaning down, and obviously you have to tie his hands to the posts. So he stays in place. Next step. V'chazan HaKnesses and the attendant of the congregation, meaning the agent of the Beis Din. Okay. Ocheis b'begadav. He grasps the fellow's garments and pulls them away from the area it's going to be lashed. And it's stopping again now. Okay, b'begadav. He grasps the garment and pulls it away from the area to be lashed. Right? He has to bare his upper body. So he's got to pull away. So it says, you shall give him lashes. Means the lashes have to fall upon his body, not on his garments. Okay? You can imagine a guy would come to the Beis Din with a big, thick wool coat. That's cold. So they're removing the garments. Now, when they're removing it, it could very well be Nikru, if they tear, they tear. And Vinifru, Nifrumu, and if they split open at the seams, they split open at the seams. In other words, we're ripping it down, so therefore it's possible that it could get ripped. Okay? In other words, the agent does not have to exercise caution to prevent the garment from ripping. You have to be careful. This is all to embarrass the guy. It's all what it's meant for.
Yeah.
You have to remember, the guy was warned before he did this to not do it.
Right.
So that shows a tremendous amount of chutzpah and brazenness. So part of this is to humble him. So he has to be humiliated. That's what has to be done. So how much you remove the shirt? Atshahu magala sleep until it uncovers his heart. So that means his chest and the back is completely exposed. Now, he's ready to get lashed, but the lasher isn't ready yet. V'ha'evan nesuna macharav. And then a stone was placed as a platform behind the fellow being lashed. Okay, you'll see why. It wasn't placed directly behind it, but to the side, so that when he would be necessary, he could give lashes across his back, as we'll see in a minute. Okay, we're having another. This is like unbelievable today.
This is pretty gruesome stuff.
I don't know why it's doing this today. I haven't had this in a long time. I don't know why it's still needing to sink. Okay, so it's now the Tiferes Yisrael explains that the platform was placed so that it would not be visible to the one being lashed, in order he would not become additionally frightened at the sight of the agent holding the whip over him. According to Rambam, however, who maintains the lash was administered along the length of the body, it seems likely that the stone platform was positioned directly behind the one being lashed. It's either behind or behind, but to the side. Okay? So either it's the side or right behind him. Either way. Okay? Then, Chazan HaKnesses Omed Alav. So now the agent of the Bezdin stands on that platform. Ritzua Rabbi Yodon, a strap in his hand. Now, what's the Ritzua made out of? Shel Egel, made out of calfskin. Kfula, doubled over. Lishnaim into two. And then Shnaim Larbar, and then doubled over again into four. So it looks like there's four calfskins, but it's really one. So it's a long strap, but it was folded over. That's one strap. One strap folded off into four. Ushtei ritzur shel chamor olos v'yardezo. And two more straps of donkey hide run up and down within that strap. Which means the words of donkey hide do not appear in the standard Mishnah, etc. The Brisa teaches us that the two additional straps were made of donkey hide. Okay, fine. How did this happen? There are holes in the calfskin straps through which the donkey hide thongs were drawn through the calfskin in a stitch-like manner. The screw from the side, the donkey hide appeared to go up and down. So it was stitched through. So there were two of them. So now you got a lot. You got something that's fourfold over, and you got things running, two donkey's hides going through and through the thing. All right? Also, now the handle of the whip, yoda tefach, should be a tefach long. That's the handle. Virachava tefach, and it should be wide a tefach as well. So that's pretty wide. Virosha, and now they had to gauge it that the tip, the end of the strap, magas apis kreso, should reach the edge of, meaning the beginning of his stomach. So when he's lashed across his back, there's different lashes, but one of them, it should fit in a way that it will be able to go around and reach till the middle of his stomach. Okay? Now there's big arguments exactly how it was. This is going according to Rivan, who says the lashes are given across the width of the back. Not the length, but the width of the back. Apparently he explains that the whip should be long enough to reach across his entire back and wrap around his side to where his stomach begins. That's one interpretation. The Rambam, you know, says they're given along the length of the body. According to the strap, must be long enough to reach his midriff when he's struck on his chest. Okay, where the frontal lashes are inflicted. We'll see all that in a minute. Okay, so they got to measure. Moore's going to ask, well, how does that work out? Everybody's different height. So they, Moore will say it was an adjustable strap. So they would adjust it for that. Okay, now how do we give the lashes? Umaka also shlish milafanav. He gets strike one third of the lashes on his front. So he goes like around. He's to the side, so he comes from around and gets them around the stomach. That's one third. The shteyados and two thirds milrachav on his back.
About the post in front, and he's how do you get in the front with that?
Well, remember, one side it was to the side with machlokas. One says to the side. If the guy is here and he's at the side, so he's.
But he's leaning against the post, so he kind of blocks the wood.
No, he's still high enough. He can get him right here. That's how he whips him. Guy's over here and he whips him like that.
Now we got it.
Okay. So according to Rivan, the one third was administered across the stomach and two thirds across the back. According to Rambam, the one-third was on his chest between his pectorals, and the two-thirds were on his upper back. One-third on one shoulder, one-third on the other shoulder. So it was a machlokas exactly where the person got it. Either way, it was extremely painful. And when the guy is being struck, he's not standing straight, he's not sitting, he's bent over. That's why he's leaning on the post with his hands tied down. Why do we know he has to be leaning? Shenemar says, and the judge, meaning the person administrating it, shall cast him down, meaning causing him to be bent downwards. Now, the guy lashing, and the one who's administering the lashes, he hits him with one, uses one hand with all his might. One hand goes harder than two hands. Right? Give it as much as he can. And then there's an administrator who reads psukim. And he's kore, he reads. We'll see what that is in a minute. Okay, we learned that from the pasuk. It says, Bikorestia, there shall be an investigation, which also can be read as Bikriyate, it should be accompanied with a recitation. And what are the psukim that are read? Psukim are read the following, it's a whole bunch of psukim. Imlo sishmar lasos, if the fellow is not careful to perform the words of the Torah that are written, to fear Hashem, etc., etc. Vipila Hashem esmakoscho vesmakos, and then Hashem shall make extraordinary your blows and the blows of your offspring, great and faithful blows and evil and faithful illness. It's a whole bunch of psukim over there. Vachozer lefchila mikra, and then he returns to the beginning. If the guy finishes the psukim before all the lashes were given, he keeps reading the psukim. Now, according to our version of the Mishnah, the phrase, and then he returns to the beginning of the verses, appears twice, here and again later, after the listing of the two additional verses that are to be recited. Since it's clear he does not begin to repeat the verses until he has completed all of them, this first appearance of the phrase is seemingly an error. Okay, fine. Okay, anyway, it's when he finishes the whole thing. We'll see later on, the Gemara is going to discuss all the psukim that are there. Okay, then the reader continues a little bit more. He reads more psukim. Ushmartem es divrei habris hazos. You shall observe the words of this covenant that you will succeed in what you do. V'chaisem, and he ends a pasuk in Tehillim, which we all are familiar with. It starts Marav. V'urachu mechaper avon v'lo yashchis v'rbo lo shiv apol yirgo moso Hashem Hashem alchinen v'yom koreinu. Okay, interestingly, some Rishonim say this is the source why we say it at Marav. Why do we say it? Why? Between Mincha and Marav, or really finishing Mincha, and then you're going to start Marav. Because it was uttered then, where is this now? Presumably we're asking that whatever suffering was borne throughout the day should serve as an atonement for any wrongdoing that was committed, and the congregant should be spared from further divine wrath. The Rishonim recite other reasons as well. So, but it's 13 words, so that also fits into the, you want to have a multiple of 13 in which you're lashing. Some say also when the lashes were given, it was given after Mincha, before Marav. But anyway, so this fits in over here. Now, this is where you're really supposed to put in. Now, when he's finished all these verses, this is where it belongs now. Then he gets back to, goes over the verses in case the lashes were finished by that time. Now, the Marsha notes that the last three verses are 13 words each, corresponding to the three sets of 13 lashes, constituting the full 39 lashes. There's the first pasuk. Okay, I don't know, this mistake with their numbers over here. It should be 10, 11, 12, 13, not 21, 31. Anyway, so it's 13 in the first pasuk, Ushmartem as 13, and Vurachum as 13.
Then we 39. Why do we end at 31?
It's a typo. No, each one is 13. That's why it's a typo. Oh, no, it should be 11, 12, 13, 11, 12, 13. That's a typo over there. All right? So the ayat says, if you won't be careful to perform other words that seem to be apostle before, that was an introduction. So theoretically, it should be one word for every lash.
So then the first part of the Tehillim that he's reading should be read before he starts. Only at this point he starts to lash.
Yeah, that's what he's saying. That's what he's saying. You read something before, but then these are, it's a good way to measure the 39 lashes. Now, what happens? They analyze he can accept so many lashes, but guess what happened? The mace tachas yara, what if the guy dies while he's being administered the lashes? They figured he could take X amount, and in the middle he dies.
Whoa.
So is anybody responsible? Potor, the agent is exempt. Everyone's exempt because he was acting on behalf of the Bez Din. Remember, it's only when you kill inadvertently for something that you want to do for your own pleasure, you go to Golos. But if it's because you're doing a mitzvah, and your mitzvah is being an agent of course, how can you go to Golos for that? However, what if there's an error made? What if for whatever reason, Hosif lo od retzua achas, what if they gave one more blow than he should have given, umes, and then he dies? Then I raise the Goliath. He goes into exile. Okay? Because now it's interesting. The agent is exiled for killing him inadvertently since he's not administered exile as a duly empowered agent of the Bez Din. Yeah. Right? Because he wasn't supposed to do that. Yeah. The Bez Din did not direct him to deliver the last lash. Although the agent thought he was acting throughout at their behest, he was really acting on his own, legally speaking, insofar as the last lash. Consequently, the person being lashed dies, the agent must go into exile. It does not matter whether the agent added a lash to the full count of 39 or to the lesser assessment of the Bezin.
But if he doesn't die, he doesn't go into exile.
No. Yeah. Now, here's an interesting point.
It's a lash.
Now, the commentaries cite two passageways elsewhere in the Talmud that bear upon this Mishnah. Rivan cites a Bryce recording Sanhedrin that if each one of the 10 people beats someone with a club and that person dies, they're all exempt from capital punishment, even the last person. We already learned that, if you recall. Mm-hmm. And certainly if it be inadvertent, then the last lash wouldn't go to exile. Well, may I ask then, why is the agent of the Bez Din liable to exile if he adds his own lash to those that the court required? It's like the first one from the court and the second one's from him. So it's like more than one person hit him.
Well, it wasn't intentional, really. He made a mistake.
Doesn't matter, but you go to exile. So you should at least go into exile. But why is he going into exile if it's through multiple people? So Rivan explains the Gemara in Sanhedrin is speaking only in a case where the first people wielding clubs rendered the victim into a gosus, a dying person. Since this person has already been injured fatally in the hands of the man, he's in some respects already considered dead, and the final club was merely killing a dead man. Thus, all 10 men are exempt. However, in our case, the one being lashed was not injured fatally until the agent added his own lash. Okay, that's one answer.
But it could have been in the process of dying.
But that's doche. Yeah. Good, okay. Thus, the agent is liable. B, the Gemara in Baba Kama states, according to one version, that our mission discussed a case where the error encountering the lashes was the judge's fault. The judge made a mistake in the count. Remember, he doesn't lash till he hears the go-ahead. And the agent merely relied upon him. You'll see there's a person saying lash, one, two.
Don't they read the chinam when we did that? That's not...
So in other words, the other people made the mistake.
Uh-huh. Yeah, not him.
Now, the agent is liable to exile because he killed the person being flogged. The judge, however, is not subject to exile because he personally did not strike the victim. And though he has commissioned the agent to strike the mortal blow, the judge cannot be held liable for the improper action of his agent and lay the rule that the law does not recognize agency in the matter of transgression.
That's no fair.
That's also a little bit difficult to understand. But what do you see? The guy given the lashes should know how many should be given.
He should also
be counting.
He's a lash giver, not a counter. Right?
I understand, but I guess you have to have a double check system.
Uh-huh.
When the guy, counts, you got to make sure the guy's giving you the right count. It's almost like when you're blowing the shofar. When the person tells the guy shvarim trua, what if the person makes a mistake and tells the wrong thing? Right, so you should try to follow that.
Okay.
Either way, so that we have there. Now, what if something else happens? Very embarrassing. What if Niskalka? What if he soils himself in the middle of this because of the distress, which can very much happen? You lose control of your bodily functions. So, if he soils himself in the middle, bein berei, bein b'mayim, whether it's excrement or urine, pator, he doesn't have to get any more lashes.
Ooh, that's the way.
Right, because he's already been demeaned. Remember, he already suffered enough of a disgrace.
I know. What if he's so nervous? He does it before the first.
We're going to see. It's going to talk about. It's going to talk about. It's going to talk about. So the pasuk says, 40 shall he strike him. He shall not add, lest he strike him an initial blow beyond these. Then it says, v'nikla achicha, and your brother will be demeaned. This teaches that once a guilty party has been disgraced, he is once again called your brother. In this case, that has been accomplished by the soiling and is therefore exempt from the lashes. Gemara below will discuss at what point in the procedure soiling himself exempts him. So we will see. But it is an exemption. That's what the Tanakhama says. But now Rabbi Yehuda qualifies it. The Tanakhama says it doesn't matter if it's excrement or urine. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, no. Ha'ish barei, a man exempts himself only when he soils himself. While a woman, ve'isha b'mayim, with urine, because for a woman it's more sensitive to shame. Obviously, releasing excrement is much more embarrassing than urine. So for the man, he has to have a worse embarrassment to be considered embarrassing, while a woman, a lesser amount of embarrassment.
It's not from embarrassment, it's from the pain, and the women have got a bigger pain threshold than men. It should be the other way around.
But we're talking about a shame threshold. So a woman is more sensitive to shame. She may be able to take more pain, but not more shame. All right, that was the entire Mishnah. Let's now go to the next page. Okay. So now the Gemara wants to know, to reference the opening statement over here of why we stop it. So my timer. Why are we allowed to do what we're doing over here? So it's not exactly sure which part of the Gemara it's going on, as we'll see in a minute. So Gemara answers, Mishum Nikla, because it says he shall be demeaned in your eyes. Now, this is what the commentators say. This puzzling exchange is not explained by Rivan or Tosa. It does not appear in other versions of our text. Some Gemaras omit these four words. Because what is it referring to? What's the reason? What's the reason for what? If we're to speak an explanation for our text as it is, then we must first determine which part of the mission is addressed by the Gemara's question, what is the reason? Some explain the Gemara seeks to know why the person about to be lashed is humiliated by grasping, pulling off, and possibly tearing his clothes. So some are asking the question on that. So he should be humiliated. That's the answer. So others explain the Gemara wants to know why he is being humiliated by being tied to the post. Couldn't either of these explanations, the Gemara is asking why it is necessary to subject the sinner to humiliating procedure, to which the Gemara answers, the Torah requires us to humiliate him during the lashing procedure, as it says, and your brother will be demeaned. However, there are certain problems with this approach. Tosfos agrees that there's a mitzvah to demean the sinner based on this verse, but presents this as an original idea, not one found in the Gemara. Rambam cites a different source for removing the sinner's shirt, which has nothing to do with demeaning the sinner. More fundamentally, the Gemara below consistently refers to the sinner's demeanment as something that should be avoided, and it exempts the sinner from further lash if it takes place. Thus, it seems unlikely that our Gemara would expound an obligation to demean the sinner. A Nine Mishnah suggests an alternative approach. The Gemara is addressing itself to the very end of our Mishnah. It says the Malkus procedure is ended if the person being lashed loses control of his bodily functions. The Gemara says, why is he exempt? So Gemara says, that's what it's saying, and your brother will be demeaned. Implying that once he has been demeaned, he's like your brother. Like he never sinned, he doesn't get any more lashes. That would make the most sense.
Yeah, but at what point would you consider him demeaned?
Well, if he soils himself.
That's already way down. So when you tie him to the post, he's not demeaned?
No. Okay. That's,
isn't that unusual?
Before the first lash,
you refer to the start of the Mishnah.
It could be. It could be. We'll see. The Gemara's going to talk about that. We're not up to that yet.
So we also talked about, remember in Sotah, we talked about them ripping her.
Yes. That also is to demean her.
What do you hear, though? Wouldn't rip her shirt all the way off, expose her chest and her back in front of all the...
That's right.
The court?
That, to demean her.
Yeah.
So then they wouldn't lash her. She'd be demeaned totally.
That's right.
No. But we're saying that is the procedure that's done.
But for a woman, too.
Again, either way, the Gemara's, she has to be lashed on her back. Right? So now there's a debate. Is this called demeaning or not? That's the whole discussion here. Is this the question? The Gemara's saying it's to demean her or saying it's not demeaning her?
Two-thirds on the back.
Right?
One-third on the chest.
Right?
And then one-third on the chest.
Yeah.
So she's got to be able
to expose a woman.
You have to do it.
That's the meaning. Oh, yeah,
you have to do it.
You guys or something?
Why?
These two guys.
No,
no.
Shirts. I
came back. What? What's the matter?
They bought the same shirt.
Okay. The same shirt. Fine. Let's move on over here. Omer of Sheshes. Mishum Rilos Ben Azari. Minai L'Ritzua Shisha Lego. How do we know that the straps should be made out of calfskin? Like, what's it? Why calfskin? Or where's a hint to it? Because it says like this. Arbam Yekenu, it says he gets 40 lashes. And now what's the next pasuk after lashes? V'samichlei, the next pasuk, a new topic is losach sam shor b'disho. You don't muzzle an ox during its threshing. So the juxtaposition of those two psukim is telling us that that's the material should be out of calfskin. Because it's talking about the ox. It says an ox and not a calf. Right? So shor, which is usually translated as ox or bull, shor may refer to even a day-old calf. So therefore the calf. Okay, so since one is next to unrelated subjects, so
well,
that gives...
Well, they picked that, not the ox.
Well, we're saying a one-day ox is a calf. Flexible.
Yeah, one. Why pick the one-day calf? Right? Because if the same word applies to both.
I guess the calf so, strap is hurts more or whatever.
I'm just curious where the donkey comes from.
Yeah.
They're gonna come to it.
Okay.
The Amar of Sheshes, Mishum Rabbi ben Azaria. Okay, now that we brought already Rav Sheshes, then Rav Elozer ben Azaria, we go off topic over here, but a little bit on topic. Minayin Liyavam Shenafel if they mukashkin. What about if a woman has to fall to Yibum to the husband's brother? But the brother is full of boils and is repulsive to her.
Right.
So this is like going to make her marry a guy who's so disgusting. So how do we know she'ein chos minosa, that we don't muzzle her, means that we don't silence her, and we allow her to say, I don't want to be married to this guy. Uh-huh. Same thing. It says you shall not muzzle an ox during his threshing. For some of them, what's the next one going forward is what? Two brothers live together, so he has to marry the wife, the widow. So he had before, but you don't put that. You don't muzzle the ox and the donkey, so we don't muzzle her. So we have a drusher from the first to the second, from the second to the third. The lashing is with the calf's strap. That's going forward, and then from the calf one to the brother who dies, we don't force her to marry such a fellow as well. Okay, there's going to be more statements, but it's 8 o'clock, so we're going to stop it over here for today.
Yeah. Okay.